New Orleans preservationist, author, travel writer, and Southern romanticist Harnett Kane put it this way in a book published 4 years after the Supreme Court's 1954 Brown decision integrating the schools. Christmas before the Civil War was a day when slaves received gifts and spiked eggnog from their masters before feasting in their quarters on spare ribs and other delights. There they joked around in a state of hilarity and goodwill, he wrote, held an evening dance and roasted popcorn for their children over crackling fires. Sometimes their masters showed up at their Christmas dinner to exchange toasts, and it was common for the master's entire family to appear for the slaves' holiday dance, where they were accorded places of honor in the front so that they could best observe their slaves' exuberance. Or so Kane asserted. Squaring popular pastoral Southern Christmas images with other admissions about persisting white Southerners' fears about Yuletide's servile insurrectionism is no easy matter, since ample historical documentation seems to substantiate every element of the story that was earlier related. Diaries and letters of Southern slaveholders, the observations of travelers to the Old South, newspaper accounts, and even some anti-slavery publications attest that slaves feasted, danced, received presents, rested and relaxed, held family reunions, and got married during the Christmas season. A Northern writer, Meta Victoria Fuller Victor, for example, intended her fast-selling dime novel from 1861 as a critique of slavery. She made a seething, angry plantation cook its central character and explored how enslavement wrecked the family lives, even of slaves owned by kindly masters. Still, her plot conceded to white Southerners that slaves got a full week's Christmas work hiatus when they were gained immunity from punishment and care. And she described how enslaved people radiated happiness over their hoe cake and molasses holiday breakfast and grand roast hog holiday barbecue, and how they fiddled, sang, and danced away holiday hours when they were not gorging themselves. Still, there is another side to Christmas in the Old South, a darker story that is only hinted in at concessionary remarks about slave insurrection rumors at holiday times. That's from the opening of Yuletide in Dixie, Slavery, Christmas, and Southern Memory by Robert E. May. Certainly, slavery is one of the United States' darkest historical stains. And today's book by retired Purdue professor Bob May takes us back to a time and to places many of us would just as soon forget. But as May points out again and again in this readable, even page-turner of a book, slavery was not a regional scourge, but a national obsession for hundreds of years, supported in part by a mythology that spread throughout the nation, both before and after the Civil War. A mythology that supported the existence of slavery by eluding its many inhumane aspects and drawing attention instead to those few moments of the year when slaves were accorded a minimal amount of courtesy and interest by those who kept them suppressed all the other weeks and months of the year. It was, as we heard, a widespread mythology that sponsored the image of Southern enslaved humans as somehow delighted to find themselves in the supposed care of their masters and mistresses, not least during the annual Christmas time, when it was said and written, as May points out again and again in newspapers and magazine articles, in novels, in plays, that the enslaved were feted with foods, with drink, with games, and with presents from their supposedly well-meaning masters, and that the enslaved enjoyed and took part in festivities that far superseded the more dour and modest Christmases, it was said, of much of the Yankee North. While the term Yule can refer to both Christmas itself and the season, Yuletide references the season as a whole, essentially that period of early winter that runs from early December to early January. And indeed, the Yuletide written about here in Yuletide in Dixie was widely understood as, at a minimum, a week-long celebration on many Southern plantations and towns, a time when those enslaved and their masters would refrain from work and focus their energies instead on feasting, dancing, and even visiting friends and relatives far away from their plantation homes, with the expectation, of course, that such small freedoms were of excruciatingly temporary duration only. The book's cover itself is emblematic of the picture painted in these pages, showing a Christmas tree formed from rusted chains. But Yuletide on the pre-Civil War, that is, antebellum U.S. South, had a more sinister meaning as well. For the Christmas season was a time of year when slave rebellions were feared by those who were not enslaved, from those in charge of the larger society to those who lived in poverty but not in slavery themselves. And this fear of revolt can be dated back far into Southern history as the decades and then even the centuries rolled past. That fear took on a seasonal life of its own that, while rarely erupting into a bloody reality, nonetheless held its grip on those not enslaved year after year after year. And so efforts by the antebellum, not enslaved peoples, to focus attention on something less noxious than slavery became an important part of both propaganda meant to proclaim the well-meaning of Southern society to skeptics both near and far, and offering the option of a bright, shiny object to distract attention and thus help with preventing rebellions from beginning in the first place. As May's telling of this story unfolds, we learn that the fear of rebellions continued even after the Civil War ended. Indeed, the Christmas time of 1865, the year the Civil War ended, was fraught with fears of reprisals against whites and not unfounded hopes for radical land and animal redistribution on the part of the now freed slaves. Neither situation in 1965 came to pass. And so the mythology of the happy Christmas time in the antebellum South continued, even after the old Southern way of life had given way to a new free society, gaining steam in the 1870s and the 1880s as alternative histories were written and consumed with relish by readers of the Old South as well as the North, histories that repeated the claims of well-intentioned masters and appreciated enslaved people. May spends quite a bit of time suggesting why this mythology of the antebellum South was such a powerful storyline that books pushing the lies were popular for decades after the Civil War. And to add to the ignominy of it all, May lays out the continuation of the storyline in much more sanitized forms held through the middle of the 1900s and even into the 2000s, titling one chapter in particular, Sanitizing the Past. Though the airbrushing of Southern antebellum culture focused on the jolly life to be had in and around the great houses during Christmas, it ignored the enslaved people who provided so much of the labor which allowed the wealth for such entertainments to be funded in the first place. The writers and illustrators of such stories were able and are able to write and illustrate about the gleaming silver service, the copiously laden tables, and rich beverages provided, all without what would have been obvious, the work of the enslaved people who made such glowing illustrations of memory happen at all. Indeed, he points to the current magazine Southern Living as one of the exponents of this glorious Christmas time in the South. Professor May has dipped liberally into the high and low literature of the time, both academic and colloquial, to present those myopic but often much read and successful views of the American South as a land of Yuletide revelry for all. The breadth of the research on display in Yuletide and Dixie shows both May's familiarity with the history. He's the author of more than one antebellum U.S. history, and shows both the variety of geographical difference and yet the cultural similarities across the South and its reflection into the North as well, tidewater to plateau, from Delta to the hinterlands of the basin areas. Indeed, the detail in many of these chapters is breathtaking, taking us back in time as we read those newspaper articles, as we read those journal entries. Let's wrap up with May's own skeptical take on the wonders of the Christmas season, as portrayed as recently as the 2000s in the pages of that glossy, popular magazine that I mentioned earlier, Southern Living. A consistently top 20 magazine, he notes, May writes, one could argue that this historical amnesia was harmless, since such pieces at least avoided traditional commentary, stereotyping Southern masters as humane to their laborers or Southern slavery as a mild system of bondage. How could articles about plantation recipes or freezing rebel soldiers by campfires offend anyone? Yet, in subtle ways, Southern Living's benign endorsements of plantation holiday traditions perpetuated into the 21st century, the misperceptions that this book challenges, which impair racial reconciliation today. Southern Living's luscious photographs of plantation holiday meals conjure nostalgia for the slaveholding world that enabled this feasting, in the process condoning slavery without even alluding to it. They legitimize, in very subtle and I believe insidious ways, the confrontational attitudes of Dixie flag wavers and monument defenders by exclusively projecting positive imagery about antebellum Southern Christmas customs without referencing the coerced labor underpinnings. Such writings preserve the flawed stereotypes embedded in post-Civil War memoirs and fiction discussed in the preceding chapter and disseminate them to a new generation of Americans. Is it still common to extract slaves from the plantation scene as if they never existed? Or do modern assessment reiterate the Yuletide themes favored by Southern memorists, fiction writers, news reporters, and illustrators in the time of Thomas Nelson Page, which incorporated slave actors but elided black resentment, agency, and resistance? In the end, our inquiry necessarily probes the contested contacts of modern public history. Quite an interesting read, especially for this time of year, but certainly for any time that you're in the mood for something inquisitive about America's past. Yuletide in Dixie. Pulitzer Prize-winning author James McPherson said, "Robert May's deeply researched portrayal of the realities and images of Christmas celebrations in the antebellum South offer new insights on the nature of slavery and its cultural impact. He shows that while not entirely mythical, pro-slavery depictions of holiday merrymaking and gift engages among slaves and their owners became a staple of the pro-slavery argument before the Civil War and a dominant theme in the Lost Cause romanticization of the South and slavery. But the realities of slavery were quite different," McPherson continues, as he makes clear in this important work. Yuletide in Dixie, Slavery, Christmas, and Southern Memory by Robert May. It's available at all of our fine libraries, including certainly the West Lafayette Public Library.